Welcome back to California Burning, made possible with funding from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. My name is Matt Fidler. I've spent most of the last 18 months studying fires and fires' place in our ecosystem. There are so many reasons why fires have been causing us so many problems recently, and it boils down to one overarching theme: how we have lived on and taken care of this land. Fire is a naturally occurring thing, and as we've shown in previous episodes, fire needs to happen on these landscapes, but it should be on our terms, when the fire will provide the services that we need, like reducing the forest fuel load on the ground and keeping tick and pest populations under control. When we know how these ecosystems work, we can make them work for us. The big things that we value in the world are all provided by these ecosystems, from life, food, water, natural resources, shelter, beauty, recreation. That's why you may hear some of my guests say things like ecosystem services. A functional ecosystem helps with groundwater retention, wind regulation, and local rainfall. And those all directly impact fire severity. And a big part of this is the health of the soil and its ability to hold water and nutrients. To get a better understanding of how this all works, I met up with Wendell Gilgert. He's the director of Working Landscapes, Division of Blue Point Science, where he assists ranchers, farmers, and others making the best use of their land. I wanted him to tell me how you improve a landscape to provide better ecosystem services, such as fire resilience.
I tell the young people that I work with, it's not rocket science. It's more complex than that. It's tremendously complex, you know, because you've got all these systems that are moving in different ways and all these processes. And then you layer on top of that politics and economics and culture and sociology. So how the world works through all these different lenses that we all have to filter them through then becomes incredibly complex. You know, putting a man on the moon is a trajectory. You know, we can figure that out with math and engineering. But the most difficult thing for humans to do is to live on an acre of land without spoiling it. And we have not figured out a way to do that yet.
Wendell told me early on in our talk that now in California, we have five seasons.
The new joke is we have five seasons now in California: winter, spring, summer, fall, and fire. Okay, so, you know, and that's our new reality.
Basically, Wendell is saying we can't look at fire as an isolated problem anymore. Fires are becoming more severe as we change the nature of our land. And this problem can't be understood with reductionist science that ignores the systems that these fires exist in.
Or we can look at a fire and we can say, okay, here's the problem, without looking at the system. So do we look at the water cycle? Are we looking at nutrient cycles? Are we looking at how succession is occurring or not occurring? Are we looking at pollination? How effective is photosynthesis? Are the trophic levels of different kinds of food available for wildlife available or not available? So you kind of look through this lens of a land doctor. So how's the patient doing? How's Mother Earth doing here? And what's the prescription to get her better? You know, maybe it's some rest. Maybe it's some brush management. Maybe it's planting. Maybe it's prescribed grazing. So whatever it is, the land, like people, can get better with conservation prescriptions.
To solve the underlying problem of catastrophic wildfires, you need to improve the function of local ecosystems. Treating only the symptoms of the problem, the excess fire fuel, the overly dense forests, is a good start, but it's not enough.
The upshot is that we're putting a lot more carbon dioxide and water vapor in the atmosphere.
When talking climate science, we often talk about the carbon cycle, burning fossil fuels from the ground and putting that carbon right into the atmosphere via smoke, which then traps warm air. But water vapor traps warm air as well. Just like with carbon, we need more of our water in the ground to hydrate the soil rather than the upper atmosphere where it traps heat. Both of these systems are out of balance, but both can be improved with the help of healthy vegetation.
Go back in time to when you were a sophomore in high school and you were learning about photosynthesis, and recall the equation, okay? It's CO2 plus H2O, so water vapor and carbon dioxide, in the presence of sunlight, The plant produces sugar. C6, H12, O6 with oxygen given off. So what is that C6, H12, O6? It's sugar. It's carbon. And so that plant, to the extent that that plant can really grow and be robust, is building sugar. And, you know, anybody that drinks wine knows that sugar is referred to as Brix. So Brix is a measure of sugar in the plant. And the higher the Brix, the more productive the plant. So we can, I've got a spectrometer in here. We could take a look at these plants and see how much Brix this plant is producing right now. If it's struggling, if it doesn't have the right amount of nutrients, water, sunlight, and soil conditions where the soil is compacted, or the soil has, you know, things in it that keep the plant from growing well, then it's going to struggle, and the Brix are going to be like 2 or 3 or 4%. But if the plant has everything it needs and is growing robustly, you know, you could have Brix north of 25%. Okay, that's a big difference. And you think about all these plants here filtering and taking carbon dioxide and water vapor out of the atmosphere. It is our least expensive, most hopeful way to, you know, turn around climate change.
Repairing local ecosystem function can happen with willpower. I've seen many examples all over the world. Yes, it seems daunting to reverse global climate change, but local ecosystems can be greatly improved by community members, improving the lives of the people who live there too. And it starts by just understanding what those systems need to thrive.
And one of the main things is building soil. Let me show you here real quick.
Please. Wendell goes to his truck and picks up a little trowel and brings me to a patch of grass growing back in an area that was lightly burnt by the campfire several months earlier.
So what are you doing here?
I am getting into the soil and looking at the roots of these plants. And if these plants are healthy and if the soil is healthy, there we start to see it. You see how the soil adheres to the root?
Mm-hmm.
So that means that this plant is pulling carbon dioxide, pulling water vapor out of the atmosphere. It's building sugar. It's producing foliar matter on top, but it's also exudating that sugar down into the soil. And what's happening right here...
You can tell that with the little bits of...
Yeah, see how the soil is adhering to the root? If I pulled up a plant where the soil wasn't adhering to the root, then it's not building. You know, there's round
like
up
stickiness from sugar. Is that literally what it is?
It is literally the exudates of the sugar that the root is putting into the soil, so that all what we call soil and edaphic are like, you know, so soil, plants, and animals. So we call them edaphic flora and fauna. So all that edaphic flora and fauna. See that root? That is beautiful. See all of the soil that's adhering to it.
Mm-hmm.
If we put that in a microscope, you'd see fungus and bacteria and literally hundreds of soil microbes that are feeding on that sugar that's being exuded by that root.
Because soil is a living thing. There is some mineral rock, but soil is mainly living microbes and decomposing organic material. And without water, these reactions, passing of energy from life form to life form, plants can't grow in that soil. Healthy forests won't be able to live in that soil. And healthy soil absorbs and stores water for all life, including us to use when it's not raining. Something especially important for us in the West with our long, dry summers. If you're skeptical about the importance of soil health, Wendell has one last argument to make for you. Just think about the Dust Bowl in the 1930s. The federal government under Franklin Roosevelt started a soil conservation service and hired a soil scientist named Loudermilk.
And he tasked Loudermilk to go around the world to where there were great civilizations and see if he could ascertain what role the soils had to do with those civilizations flourishing and ultimately not being there anymore. You know, so he went to Egypt, he went to China, he went to the Middle East. And what he found was the same thing over and over again. So where the gardens of Babylon were, where the cedar forests of Lebanon, where the Garden of Eden was, where the Nile and the Nile Valley were all deserts now. These are not stupid people. These are people that invented the clock. They invented the wheel. They invented math. These were intelligent people. If they're in the room with us right now, they're more intelligent than we were, maybe. But they didn't have the same technology. So now we've got the technology, and we're really accelerating what they already did, and that was to certify, you know, this world. And, you know, people to keep talking about, well, the sustainable this, sustainable that. And, you know, I and others would argue that we have no idea what sustainability is because we've never done it. There's no history of any human doing anything that's sustainable. And that means for centuries. So China's been doing what they've been doing for centuries, and look what's going on there. You know, the destruction of the Yellow River, you know, valley.
Wendell Gilgert of Blue Point Science. And since Wendell mentioned China's Yellow River Valley and how traditional agriculture has turned it into a desert, I thought we could end the series with someone who has documented people restoring that same valley to a fertile, productive ecosystem once again.
Hi, I'm John D. Liu, and I'm the Ecosystem Ambassador for the Common Land Foundation. And I'm a visiting fellow at the Netherlands Institute of Ecology. I study function and dysfunction in terrestrial ecosystems on a planetary scale.
John has made films documenting the restoration of ecosystems all over the world, including the film Green Gold that can be viewed on YouTube. He says the key to such projects is the soil.
Over a very long period of time, the soil forms, each generation of life dies and gives up its body and builds up an organic layer on top of the geologic materials. And that layer is the microbiological habitat. Aerobic bacteria, you have fungi, you have insects, and all these microscopic organisms. And they're not something to be afraid of. They're not something to not understand. They're something to be rather fascinated about, because they're the basis of creating the systems which are feeding the plant materials, which in turn feed the animal materials. And so, you know, without them and without the photosynthesis of the plant materials, we wouldn't be here.
And this process contributed to soil buildups for millions of years. Then, at one point, maybe tens of thousands of years ago, human beings first started to clear plant cover for agriculture, which started the soil degradation process. And as the human population and our technology grew at a faster and faster rate, we cleared more and more vegetation with mining, large-scale deforestation, huge tracts of industrial-scale farming.
Then, as the organic layer is reduced, the temperatures rise.
Remember, plants convert the sunlight, the solar radiation, into energy to grow. Without a plant canopy blocking that sun, it just hits the soil directly, drying out any moisture and life in those soils. Life cannot survive without water.
So imagine you have all this agricultural land, which was once covered either by trees or by perennial grasses. So either way, you've removed the canopy. So what happens when you do that? Then the solar radiation hits, the temperatures are raised, and it begins to dry everything out. So you're essentially dehydrating a once functional biome. And, you know, these areas were probably savanna, forest savannas with mixed wetlands. So now you want to have agriculture and you drain the wetlands and you remove the tree cover and then you plow up the perennial grasses. I mean, every one of those actions is a massive change. So what ecosystems do is they adapt to whatever is happening. But they adapt, in this case, at lower and lower levels of functionality. And now you have a situation where you have a decade of drought, then you have massive wildfires, then you have terrible floods, and then you end up with the toxicity from the leaking stuff. So if we never get this right, then this cycle is repeated and repeated. And we should know this because it's already been there historically. So all of the ancient civilizations have gone in the same direction. So they took down their canopies. They dehydrated their biomes. There you, if you go to these places, they're deserts.
I'm afraid this could be happening to the town of Concow right now. Concow used to be forested. Much of that forest was cut for timber over 100 years ago. It's had fire after fire, one every 9 or 10 years, for many decades. And there have been no major attempts at restoring that soil. And trees just aren't growing back anymore. When the campfire started just east of Concow, there weren't many trees to slow the wind or that fire down. Just dry, invasive, annual grasses and shrubs. And when you add heavy winds to that equation, you have a perfect storm for the fire to burn right across Concow and into the dense town of Paradise, which is exactly what happened during the campfire.
And when you have extreme temperature differentials, because over here you have a canopy and over here you have something which is exposed, well, that is what creates wind. So you can create motion this way. And then if the density of the air is different now because it's not carrying as much moisture, then you get this like very serious wind, or you get vortex activity. So when you get vortex activity, this is like tornadoes or hurricanes or firestorms, then, you know, what are you going to do about this? This is physics. You're not going to do anything about it then. You know, at that point, it's cause and effect. You're done. You know, it's only when we understand these factors and we try to be proactive in creating a denser air, maintaining a lower surface temperature, maintaining moisture in the lower atmosphere where it can condense and precipitate.
This is the point of ecosystem restoration camps. The idea is to gather people who have the time, who have the passion, and know this work needs to be done to restore ecosystems so they can support us, humans. John has documented successful efforts to restore ecosystem functions all over the world.
You know, the things that we need to do are increase biodiversity, increase biomass, and increase organic material in the soils. So if we all joyfully come together and do that, instead of like run around thinking that, well, we got to get to the store, we got to do this and that, and yeah, let's bring over everything from Bangladesh and Chile or something, or West Africa. Let's imagine that we sit down and we eat together and we do some work and we restore the streams and we restore the vegetation and we restore the soil. And we find out, well, you know, a lot of people say, well, how can you do that? We have to eat. Well, do you think that dysfunctional ecosystems are more productive than functional ones? That's ridiculous. The functional ecosystems are vastly more productive and vastly more valuable. And so that's what we need to do. So who can do that? Well, the homeless people can do that. Young people who want to do that can do that. Retired people who want to do that can do that. Everybody can do that. And, you know, all the students, every single person should know about this, because every civilization that didn't protect their ecological systems and those systems collapsed, those civilizations failed. And the sand is blowing over the ruins of once great civilizations around the world.
You can learn more about John Liu and his restoration efforts at ecosystemrestorationcamps.com. You can get links to all our guests and many more people that I interviewed for this series at californiaburning.net. We also have videos and pictures of the people that I talked to and the places I visited. All episodes of California Burning can be found anywhere you get your podcasts, on the NPR One app or at californiaburning.net. In the first episode, we decided that Smokey Bear led us astray. He said that all forest fires were always bad. Well, times have changed, and I encourage you to visit smokeybear.com now. His message is now one that accepts the complicated nature of forest ecology. And Smokey is just as concerned with the more complicated than rocket science nature of this problem. He accepts that fire might be part of the solution. So please, don't give Smokey grief. He's updated his message. My message from the series is simple. To solve the issues that we're having with fires, we need to accept our role in maintaining functional ecosystems, from forests to grasslands to our own neighborhoods. And by understanding our own land and our role in taking care of it, we can make our local ecosystems more functional and more fire resilient. Thank you for listening to California Burning. This project was made possible with generous support from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. A big thank you to all the guests that appeared in this episode: Randall Hauser, Brennan Bird, Brittany Dyer, Mike Mitzel, Valerie Navarro, Wendell Gilgert, and John D. Liu. California Burning was produced by me, Matt Fidler, with invaluable help from the amazingly talented Sarah Bohannon, public radio guru Greg McVicker, and my personal hero, Jill Fincher. Original music was beautifully composed by Stephen LaRosa of Wonder Boy Audio, and a big shout out to the general manager of North State Public Radio, Phil Wilkie, for believing in this project from the start, and creative PR's Kathy Gronau for getting this show on your public radio station. This has been a co-production with my public radio station, North State Public Radio. Learn more about what we do at mynspr.org. Thanks for listening to California Burning.